races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Pimlico Race Course. Hi ho, everybody. Black Eyed Susan Day. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. Can't even call it breaking news, because it was more or less breaking all day yesterday, but the official confirmation, and I guess at least through these first two stops, the bugaboo, as it were, of pre-race scratches. And first mission, and there were indications actually first thing yesterday morning that there were issues and there was a question surrounding, you know, how ready he was going to be to compete tomorrow. And One of the sort of offbeat indications was Brad Cox not attending the alibi breakfast, and you know, being on track, and that was actually noteworthy. I mean, at first it wasn't really, you know, didn't really register until a little bit later after lunch that Cox's absence may have been telegraphing where things stood. So then the rest of the day, you know, there was the usual speculation. When I got back from the Country Life farm party, which was just a delight, and thanks to the Pons family, Josh and Michael and Ellen, everybody, all the extended family, they're all on hand, and the tremendous staff. Sally Ellen and Christy Holden, and you know, they've got the most familiar and loyal crew that have been a part of Country Life you know, for the longest time. And as I sat to finish up my Black Eyed Susan write-up and make some multi-race wager decisions, it was obvious that people were, you know, clamoring for clarity, and reached out to Dan Pride at Godolphin, and Dan gave, you know, the obvious non-answer, which was there'll be a 7 a.m. Press release. And that, I just put it out there open-ended like that, I think, and everybody drew the obvious conclusions that it was a confirmation officially. So declared, as it were, from the Preakness tomorrow, leaving a field of seven, and, you know, the first Preakness ever. It had seven. All right, I'm trying to give you something. I'm trying to give you some ammunition out there to to use. Yeah, seven go postward, and that's what it's going to be. But losing the second choice, obviously, and a horse that had, you know, a little bit of a look, very similar to one of his predecessors at Darley / Godolphin. Bernardini had been invoked, but no first mission. So that I don't want to say, you know, dooms the race to, you know, insignificance, because that it's an American classic. It's going to be there's going to be a Preakness winner, and there may be a dual classic winner when everything comes to pass tomorrow. Post time, by the way, Preakness 7:01 tomorrow. Glancing at the agenda today, lots of handicapping. You know, in a lot of ways, I wrote up If you saw that, if you're a tweeter type, you saw that I mentioned, you know, what an excellent Black Eyed Susan Pimlico special card we've got today. And I think as we handicap the Saturday card, you're, I think, the overriding message and you know, indication is that today's got a few more price opportunities. Tomorrow, you know, tomorrow there's some strong favorites. The turf races, obviously. I mean, turf lends itself, obviously, to better, you know, competitive scenarios. But there's going to be a lot of short price favorites. There's going to be one today in the Black Eyed Susan, obviously, in Faiza. Going to use taxed, not equally per se, but there's no way after seeing what I saw in Louisville for 2 weeks that I am not using taxed. I'm going to try to, you know, particularly leverage her under Faiza, but I mean, she just looked too good. And even subsequently, looks like she's continued to thrive. So, taxed as part of the approach today. And by the way, speaking of gray fillies today, the filly we talked about and we thought was yesterday was Hoosier filly was indeed Hoosier filly, and she tore around twice. I mean, if something's been amiss and sort of nagging at her, or if she just hasn't, you know, just you know, they continue to grow, you know. They grow until they're five. So, you know, horses, you know, if they're growing, their legs, you know, their legs, they have growing pains and you know, they go through spurts when, you know, they'll be out of sync. And it is every possibility that, you know, Hoosier filly dealing with things like that the last 3-4 months. Who knows? Yesterday with Tom Amos, but haven't talked about it directly. But boy, she went cruised around yesterday two times and looked terrific doing it. A couple of other pieces of news. I'm going to reach for Nick Tamaro, who I thought Nick wanted to get on early this morning. So let me see if Nick is ready for us. There obviously was also news yesterday that was kind of not unexpected, because there had been rumors to the effect that Tom Durkin might, in fact, grace the announcer's booth at Belmont for Fox Sports, and that came to pass, as it happens. So the news yesterday that Tom will be featured and call the races for Fox on Belmonte is kind of fun. And it was met with surprising, nothing surprising, I suppose, in this environment when it comes to the platforms in which people can, you know, say whatever comes into their head. Saw some very strange responses. If people think that Tom Durkin is going to walk into the booth, that he's going to come to Belmont, he's going to drive down from Saratoga Saturday morning and look at the fields for the first time on Saturday. Do you really think that an announcer who is literally one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest, in the game's history. You think that, I heard people saying, well, he could be rusty. It could be, uh-huh. If you don't think that Tom Durkin will practice and prepare and call a bunch of races between now and Belmont Day to get himself prepared and to get into the headspace and the, you know, vocal flow, then you really weren't paying attention to Durkin's career. Tom, he's going to have to, I think he's calling, what, the three races, Manhattan, Belmont, and Met Mile. that are going to be broadcast, Tom Durkin will be well prepared to call those races. And I heard people, they should give so and so they should give so and so a chance. Okay. They're gonna reach out to somebody that hasn't called races in New York, that hasn't called races at Belmont Park, and just find some. This young caller should be given it. No, sorry, it's the craziest response I ever heard. They should give, and I'm not. I mean, there is honestly. There is no profession I can think of that is more, that the carrying on it is more pronounced than when it comes to the race caller function. Nothing provokes insanity like the discussion of race calling. It's crazy. I read through, there were, I know there were a couple of, more than a couple of, thread starters, the OP, the original poster, there's some original posters that, have specific and pronounced, friendships and relationships with other announcers that have got something of, it's just nuts. So that happened yesterday. there's actually, I shouldn't be, cause now I've got to shift gears here a little bit, for two, one particularly sad and, a passing that, we'll deal with, next week. Steve Reeser. Stanley Reeser's son, that has nothing but friends around the game, passed, and this was coming. Been diagnosed, I don't know, 8 months ago, something like that, and had treatment and sometime last year, and was holding his own, and then in the last, I guess, month, things turned very dire, and word started to spread as a lot of his friends and people that he worked with and alongside in his training career and his time in the game, they all quite luckily got a chance to go down to Fort Lauderdale and see him. I mean, Steve hadn't, I think, stopped training maybe 20 years ago. His father, Stanley, one of the real mid-century stalwarts around Monmouth Park. Steve was as popular as his father. The biggest horse he had was Countess Inn. Countess Inn was the big, I think, the biggest of his horses, and we'll have some of his friends visit next week. Rusty Arnold, I know, was very, very close to Steve, enough said. We'll make sure that Steve Reeser is appropriately remembered next week. A different kind of disheartening note. Jimmy Jerkins will head to Saudi Arabia for this training position that he has taken on Monday. And everybody wishing Jimmy the best, but it remains problematic, and that someone as successful and as capable as Jimmy Jerkins chose to to take this this private position in Saudi Arabia. So just hoping for the best and that it goes well. So I wanted to make sure everybody knew to send Jimmy their their best wishes for this gig. And it'll be interesting to hear his his thoughts. Let's do some handicapping and lift the mood, as it were, because both of those pieces were they were I was obliged to pass both along this morning. All right, let me Nick is we're waiting to hear back from Nick, so let me let's go to Scott. We'll get Scott Shapiro going, and I know Shap's got a busy race day, so we'll start there. We'll get Shap going. And, I suppose other than, when you look around the game this weekend, not as active as on Derby weekend, but the Louisville at Churchill tomorrow is very good. And I'm sure that that Shap is ready for that. And whatever else is on his mind and that he's prepared to bet. Scott Shapiro, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy Black Eyed Susan Day, Preakness weekend. Hope you're well.
Absolute. It's been a great week here.
Good. Good. Yeah, disappointing, obviously, with the first mission news, but it's happened before. It'll happen again, and we'll regroup.
Exactly. It sort of, I'm not going to say air out of the balloon, per se, but, the obvious first most major contender, and at the very least, if you happen to, if you were against him, he's a horse that was going to take money, and so basically, it depresses, the end. Preakness is obviously the end of a lot of multis, so it narrows that focus. I mean, not a positive.
Not good at all. Yeah, I think it's, obviously going to hurt Handel because, like you said, I think there were alternative views with the horse. Someone like myself, I had him in the Preakness futures. I was very high on his chances. He thought he was going to get a good trip, but I saw some alternative, viewpoints that thought he was a takeout reducer to an extent, and it's going to hurt from that perspective. And, it's just an interesting race now. You assume Mage is that much likelier to win and go on the take a chance in Triple Crown, but just tough to get tough to have a strong opinion in terms of wagering in the race. So definitely took the starch out of me in terms of the wagering side of it
a little bit. How do you want to approach the weekend? Anything here today and tomorrow?
Yeah,
and then some Churchill.
Yeah, I like the car. I totally echo what you said in your intro. I find today's card much more attractive from a wagering perspective than tomorrow's. Got one opinion tomorrow, but I think, the late pick five sequence is very fun. And then I think the DuPont Distaff, the LR DuPont Distaff, is a bettable race. And I'm gonna take a swing against Interstate Daydream in there. I'm a little bit worried that she's going to get loose on the lead, but this horse just tends to be a little bit overbet, and didn't love her effort in the double dog there. I know she didn't get to the lead that day, and she gets Lasix back today. She can win, but I'm gonna I like Falconet in this spot. Appears that the daughter of Uncle Mo is a horse moving in the right direction. Big effort in the top flight at Aqueduct when drawn on the inside. I think the outside post will work well. So I like Falcon. And I think Luta Vida is going to bounce back. I really thought this mare had a bright future here in the States. Two big wins in Kentucky. Maybe just didn't like it at Oaklawn as much. been freshened up by Nacho Correas. I think she'll run a better race. And then I think underneath, Butterbean is a little intriguing. She's definitely got to get a little bit faster. But third start of the form cycle, and might get a pretty good trip. So I like Falconet as a key, and I think La Davida and Butterbean are interesting as well.
So six with 1-3. I also think that Falconet is a slight lean. I'm actually going to use all three, you know, through those two. There's two pick fives, obviously, the early pick five, and then the second pick five that starts in race three, the maiden special. And it's not, you know, it's funny, six horse field, and it's not cut and dry. And I agree about Interstate Daydream. I mean, she's okay. I'm not, you know, doesn't bowl me over.
Yeah, I you know, hopefully Ironhide and Falconet will keep her honest, because that's the main fear. If she gets loose, she could be tough to catch. But outside of that, I think she's you know, she's got a chance. Obviously, can win the race, but gambling game, she's going to be even money or so. I think we'll take a little swing against. That was my first play there of the weekend, and then move back to race nine. And I just think that this sequence is fun as a whole. I didn't have a real creative opinion in the ninth, the very one. I thought Her World would be the one to beat. It'll be interesting to see how the pace shakes out, because you got Spicy Mark, who's almost certain to be involved early, Get the Candy from the outside on the class hike, and Her World should get a really good trip. But last time she went to the lead, and I would assume she's going to sit just off, but I think she's sitting on another big race here. Looks to be a horse moving in the right direction, just has done very little wrong. Did I lose you? No, I got
it. No, I'm here. Dave Joseph popped his head in and made me laugh like he is wont to do. Sorry.
No problem. No problem. I didn't have a real strong opinion in the very one, but I did think Her World is the one to beat. Maybe Train to Artemis bounces back. Not in love with the inside trip there, but gets Lasix back after the disappointing effort in the Giants Causeway. So, yeah, not overly creative there. But in the Miss Preakness, Key of Life, another even money shot for Cox that can win, but I don't know if she has to win. I think she's going to get a lot of pressure from Topsy and Maple Leaf Mel, who has done absolutely nothing wrong, now gets open company. I thought Afternoon Tea, though, might get the right trip. It's a big step up in class, but I thought she ran well to win on April 7th at Keeneland, and the pace should be honest in here, so maybe we can get Afternoon Tea into the money, if nothing else.
I for those that have already looked at my write-up, I asked that question about not just Afternoon Tea, but also Happy Clouds. And is there a possibility that Key of Life and Maple Leaf Mel, in particular, duel each other, you know, into submission and prove vulnerable late? I mean, this is only three quarters. Maple Leaf Mel, I mean, if you absolutely had to make a life or death decision in terms of leaning one way or the other, Maple Leaf Mel is the lean versus Key of Life. It feels like, you know, this is a great opportunity for Engelhardt and Bill Parcells in this spot to win a Grade Three. I prefer her to Key of Life, and I'm going to be a little. I set up some tickets just in case. And Happy Clouds to me is the fun filly to tinker with at a big price. Yeah.
Yeah, that's you know, obviously a class test, but should get the right trip. Off what could be a lively pace, and I too would lean Maple Leaf Mel, who you would expect to be a little bit of a better price coming out of the state bred races, but I like being outside. It'll be interesting to see if they do go at it, or if Joelle could maybe relax just off of Key of Life. That'll be probably the difference maker, whether the Daughter of Cross Traffic can relax or whether they go at it on the front end.
Miss Preakness starts the last pick four, 10th through the 13th.
Plethora of multi-race options, as we come to expect. You got to love that. on these big days. I thought the Hilltop came up as about as fun a race as there is in the weekend. This is a really good race. I mean, Breath Away has done almost nothing wrong. She's impressive. The Spray comes in for Chad. Number 10 after 8, I know she's just exiting a maiden win, but man, was she impressive that day, April 23rd at Keeneland. I know she just kind of walked on the front end, but I mean, she just looked like she did it for absolute fun. And I don't see any reason to believe she needs the lead. I mean, maybe she'll get it, maybe well M2 right outside of her, or some of these dirt sprinter horses will beat her to the lead. That's the one concern, but at 12-1 or anything close, I just loved what I saw. A horse that cost $425,000. They bet down the 4-5 favoritism as a 2-year-old sprinting at Delaware on the main track. Didn't go that well. Arna de la Cour just regrouped and comes back. And this horse took a ton of money late at Keeneland and just looks like a serious animal. So class hike here for sure, but I think After Right is legit.
In fact, I wrote that as well on the write-up. I mean, anybody that listened to Arno Delacour, because we talked about this filly ahead of that start, and he just talked glowingly about his expectations for her, and you know, the way you lay it out actually is very much the approach that they took. You know, basically, let's put her away for the, you know, for the winter and be ready for, you know, a 3-year-old campaign. And this feels like the, you know, the design. And I mean, that price is going to get cut.
That's not going to happen, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I don't think she'll be double digits, but she could be a decent enough price. And I haven't looked at you know, a bunch of picks. This is an important race for another reason, because it starts the all-stake
pick five. Through there.
Yeah, and so you know, this race is important. The what's noteworthy, Scott, is that you got two Chad Browns in here. You got the Christophe Clement. You've got the Jonathan Thomas, George Strawbridge, well into outside of After Eight. That's going to be part of the pace. So there are some serious, you know,
right,
money grabbers. And listen, both of Chad's horses are very capable here, taking the next step. And there's nothing wrong with Breath Away, the Reeves, Christophe Clement, the Bated Breath filly. So the money's going to spread around, and so 12-1 maybe not, but 6-1, 7-8,
yeah,
in that range. I mean, she feels like a $16 to $18 mutual.
Well, let's hope we find out exactly what it pays.
Hey now.
So I like, this is a fun race. You basically, you know, went through the quality of it. These 3-year-old filly turf or 2-turn turf races can be some of the more fun stakes races to handicap on some of these undercards and big days. Love them. I thought the Pimlico Special was a little interesting as well. I mean, Rattle and Roll was very good last time. I thought the number was going to come back a little quicker. And now you come back off somewhat short rest, no Lasix again. And just after two really big efforts, I wonder if he's going to fire another big shot. I think he's a little bit vulnerable in here. Law Professor, I guess, could get loose on the lead, but I think maybe speed bias and Keystone Field maybe keep him honest. And is he the same horse on a fast main track and outside of New York? I think that's a question. He's very capable. But from a couple price options, I mean, maybe Kuchar can, in honor of the PGA Championship, can run a career best. He's going to have to. His wins, last year did not come against anywhere near the quality of competition that he encounters in here. But I thought it was an encouraging return race and kind of sign of confidence from Todd to send this one to this spot, the Grade 3 Pimlico Special. So I thought he was a use. If Clayton doesn't regress and can put forth the same effort outside of Florida, I mean, he ran really well, I thought, last time, just kept coming. So I thought this was a bit of a spread race where the favorites can certainly win. I think Rattle and Roll, though, is sitting on a potential regression.
Well, I'm taking a slightly different approach, and I'm going to figure that Law Professor, at his best, is just better than these. And stylistically, and particularly with Manny Franco, you know, who's ridden him to his last two wins, he can be forwardly placed. He's a mile and an eighth type and beyond constitution out of the Ghost Zapper mare. And you know, I mean, he was good for Michael W. McCarthy, and he's actually, you know, continued to be good under Rob Attriss's care. And Rob may have his detractors, but this horse has kept his form, you know, essentially as a, you know, second half 4 year old and as a 5 year old. I think he swamps this group.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see it if he runs back to some of his best efforts. They've all been in New York, I guess, is my one concern. Well, I guess he, you know, in Santa Anita. But no, I totally could see that. I prefer him. I prefer the trip he's going to get, and I prefer him to rattle and roll in this spot. But yeah, that makes some sense to me to lean on him in there here. But I think some of the long shots do have a bit of a look.
I get it.
But
I get it. How about the Phillies?
And it, yeah, I, you know, this is a this is a pretty good rendition of the Black Eyed Susan. Most years, I don't think it comes close to being on the level of Kentucky Oaks, but with the way some of those upsets happened in the last series of races, I think you could argue that it's pretty close. Obviously, Faiza would have been favored in the Kentucky Oaks. And then you've got horses that kind of, you know, Hoosier Philly, Merlaza, they didn't, you know, time things right or underwhelmed. I mean, Sacred Wish got a late start to the party, but thought she was best in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. I know you like Tax, who I thought ran really well in that fantasy without the with the blinkers coming off, trained real well. So it's kind of a tough spot because I'm not overly against Faiza by any stretch, but I like some of these price horses, particularly Merlaza, Sacred Wish, and Tax.
I agree. I mean, Faiza is very much, obviously, you got an undefeated 5-for-5 filly that, you know, there's a couple of Baffert participants this weekend that, you know, two of his pronounced and loyal clients, Michael Lund Peterson and the three amigos, Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman, they basically said, we don't have to go to Churchill, you know, specifically with this filly. Peterson didn't want her out of Baffert's care for a minute. And, you know, so to some degree, this is her Oaks. What's interesting about this field, and I'm probably going to bring this up with Granny, you know, for a lot of people are you know, obviously dissatisfied with the way Preakness has come up. But the Black-Eyed Susan stands as a what might have been for the Preakness, when you look at the horses that were on the AE list for the Oaks, where there was no movement. Here is Taxed and Hoosier Philly that are sitting by. Then you've got some horses, you know, that if you look at, you know, if you had the old Derby points list and you went down further, some of the ones that kind of jumped in to the picture late. You know, you look at horses here like Attriss has got Balpool. For Sal Cumin, you've got this comparative who was late breaking her maiden a little bit in February, and they didn't rush her. You mentioned Sacred Wish, who, you know, got one, you know, grab at the brass ring in the Oaks at Gulfstream and ran very well behind Motion's horse. So you know, there's all these horses, Merlaza as well, you know, that kind of stretched out, you know, as the winter was turning into spring. So there's all these horses that, you know, that were waiting in the wings the way there were horses waiting in the wings for Derby. Then all of a sudden the floodgates open and all those horses,
right,
they came pouring out of the gate and, you know, and into the gate, and it hurt this race. I mean, by all rights, this Preakness should have 10 right now or 11. And instead, you got what you got. Now look at, you know, what's funny about this Black-Eyed Susan, we lose the two Pletcher horses and it really didn't take away from the race.
Right. Right. Took a little of the steam out up front, maybe with Miracle, but yeah, no, great. All those points I agree with 100%. I would say Merlaza got an overly Joel passive ride at Oaklawn on April 22nd. I would not expect that to happen here with Florent Drew getting back up, I would expect her to get a lot more of an aggressive ride. And without Miracle in there, I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the lead.
Well, I can see that. You had, you know, kind of that sprint, you know, that sprint action, and Lynch might take advantage. Phase it to me is the heavy lean, and I made, much like we did the other day with in Indiana with Gigante as the logical other horse to use, and it ended up paying really handsomely.
Nice.
For me, Taxed,
yeah.
Taxed has got that same MO, and frankly, for Preakness, when we get to the Preakness conversation, Perform has that feel for me as well. You've got overwhelmingly likely winners, but if something goes, awry a little bit, waiting in the wings is somebody. To me, Randy Morse has got, this is a huge opportunity for him with this collected filly. And the fact that she came back and fired that bullet at Churchill after everybody had left. And wasn't watching, but we were watching the 2 weeks leading up to Oaks. She, other than Pretty Mischievous, she was the second best filly leading into Oaks Day. And I'm at the very least. I mean, I'll have a Wind Saver on her, but she'll be a key right below Faiza for me to try to take advantage of what I assume is going to be pretty much every bit of that 15-1.
Yeah, you should get a good price. What a claim, 50,000 back at Churchill as a 2-year-old. That's worked out very nicely and could pay even more dividends after this evening. But the only two races, the only race I really am overly excited to bet on the card tomorrow is the James Murphy, where I like Wonderful Justice. I think there's a lot of speed here. Fantastic again on the inside. You've got Fade the Noise stretching out, a Western Yarn, Top Recruit. I think Louis Saez is just going to find himself in a perfect spot just off the early leaders. And this horse had a brutal voyage in the Transylvania, was in tight on the first turn, and then had really nowhere to run the whole lane, the whole stretch. And the Transylvania had Nagarok. Did I say that right? Nagarok? Who got the good trip and ran a good second to Mo Stash, who was on the lead. But he draws outside Wonderful Justice in here. He has a chance, too. He appears to be a horse moving in the right direction for Grand Motion. But I think Wonderful Justice at 5-1, if we can get that, has done nothing wrong. Two big wins at Fairgrounds, and then over their turf course, and then an absolute cross-off in the Transylvania.
Interesting, and I probably should go back and watch the Transylvania again. I'm enamored with a couple of price ideas that I talked
about. Who you got?
Well, that Kingfish Stevens for Carlos Martin caught my eye, and that effort you got nailed late by Sell Something. Then Circling the Drain. Brittany Russell will not. She will not. Have a quote, she will be heard from over the 2 days, guaranteed.
One would think.
Yeah. She wins too often. So, and does a great job. So I had the two prices, the two 8-1s, and then, I'll protect with the two favorites as B's, Nagarok outside and Fantastic again inside. Wesley adds the LASIKs here, because this is a listed stake, and I thought Johnny, you know where this horse is going to be, and there is some other interested pace parties, but he'll be prominent throughout. I suppose that Centeno and Arnaud Delacour have the other. Something to say
Western
here.
Yarn,
with
yeah.
Western Yarn,
Top Recruit.
In terms of speed. So
yeah. And then the Preakness, just really, I was really looking for Tough Regroup. I was really looking to bet First Mission in this race for a while. Taking him out of it, a lot of National Treasure is going to end up being I mean, hammered, one would think, because he's the best alternative coming in for Baffert with the blinkers on. I mean, I could see both sides to this. You know, we see Baffert in spots like this, you know, with equipment changes, shipping cross country. I mean, it's gone well, way more often than it hasn't. But this horse just has been underwhelming for the most part.
That's fair.
You know, so maybe, you know, if you're looking to get some action in the race, you hope that Coffee with Chris presses and National Treasure just doesn't continue to move forward. I don't know how excited I am to play it that way, but I mean, I think Mage, assuming a real slow pace or you know, the key last time was you didn't get out of the gate well, but Javier was able to settle him, unlike the previous start where he, you know, rushed up and made a wide move. That's not going to work, but I just think he's better than these horses at this point. And I guess, I know you said you like Perform, who was very good. I mean, Blazing Sevens to me is another horse that I just don't have a super strong opinion on. I didn't really like him. I don't love him at a mile and 3/16, but I definitely thought he took a noticeable step forward with the blinkers, even though he didn't really run with Tappet Trice and Verifying the Wire. So I wish I had a somewhat strong opinion. It sounds like you're gonna kind of key around Perform maybe underneath some.
Pretty much, yeah. And I saw people wondering, was Mage, you know, with First Mission coming out in terms of, you know, taking away from the pace, you know, is that going to compromise Mage? As if Mage doesn't have, you know, tactical speed or, you know, the ability to, you know, be placed a little bit more forward as needed. And, you know, he's drawn beautifully for that, you know, potentiality. I mean, if people want to watch, you know, a replay, you know, to help convince them, go watch his debut.
Right.
I mean, go, you know, watch that 7-furlong romp, and that should assuage any concerns you've got about Mage being able to place himself in appropriate striking distance without being used and softening his late run. I mean, I especially watching him here, because he's already been trained for stamina by Delgado. That's Delgado's wheelhouse, as has been widely discussed, and you watch him win at 7/8, and you can see that he's got, you know, the turn of foot that's necessary. So it's a question of, you know, if it's a question of maintaining the attendance to the pace, he can do that. He was way the horse to beat anyway, and yeah. with First Mission gone, I'd be surprised now, frankly, if he doesn't win.
If he doesn't win.
Yeah,
me too. Well, it'll be a fun lead up, and, you know, everything, the connections, Ramiro and the Delgados, you know, good for them. I would have liked to have seen a race where I doubted his chances a little more from a betting perspective, but, you know, hopefully the horse runs his race.
All right. There it is. There's, the Preakness weekend per Shap. What about back home? I certainly pulled up the Churchill action, and some of the Churchill. You got a couple of races that are part of the cross country pick five as well. But the card ends the 11th tomorrow, 5:58 post for the mile and a half Louisville, the Grade Three, and it came up good.
Yeah, no, very challenging race. You've got two Mike Makers in there with Therapist and Bay Street Money. They ran first and second.
You got three.
In American.
Three of them.
Who's the? Oh yeah, there is three. Yeah, I don't know why I would be so surprised by that. Wait, who is the third? Oh yeah, Yamato.
Yamato.
Yeah. Oh, a little sneaky there. I got
it. You say Yamato, I say Yamato. Hey now.
You know, I think the race is going to play out a lot different than the Pan American, where there were a couple of runoff types and the field was completely stretched out. I think that probably in the end benefited Therapist a tiny bit more. Bay Street Money was a little bit wide. I think Bay Street Money under Ray Gutierrez will get the jump on the stable mate. I ended up picking him. I thought Another Mystery didn't really have a fair shake in the Elkhorn when having to wait for room in Verstappen and Red Knight, who obviously came back to win last week at the jump. He hasn't really won races very frequently. He's 1 for 11 at the distance, but I like him to run his race. And then I thought, if you're looking for a little value, maybe number one limited liability is a horse moving in the right direction. Loses the Lasix, and the last race was against much lesser competition, but he looked like he was up against it on paper from a pace perspective, and it looked like when they turned for home, and he just did exactly what he needed to do off the layoff to get the job done, and maybe the added ground and second start of the 4-year-old campaign could propel him. So the three favorites all make sense, and I'm going to use limited liability as well.
Shuggy, who will be here, obviously, for Perform, 8-1 with James Graham, the Louisville, the Grade 3. Anything else, Scott?
I thought that race 6 number 2 Sassy Walker was a single type proposition. This is a Phil D'Amato filly that got hammered on debut, was told about 8 times she was the horse to beat in this race, coming in from California, went bet down to 2-1 favoritism and tired in the lane to finish fourth, but that race absolutely collapsed. They went fast early, gone 6.5 furlongs. She disposed of the other speed. There's some speed in here again, but I think Sassy Walker, a filly that's better than her counterparts in race 6, and I'm going to use her with number 6, Swanson Lake, another second-time starter. This one from Whitey Michael McCarthy, another one that had didn't have things her way on debut, was over the sloppy going, took some money in an 8-horse field, didn't get out of the gates all that well, and was in tight much of the way. So 2-6 for me in race 6.
Very good. 318 post for the maiden special. Phillies and mares 3 and up, going a sharp 5.5. And it's Sassy Walker for the Sassy Talker. Scott Shapiro, Scott Schapp, 34. Good luck this weekend.
Yeah, you too, Steve. Have a blast. And let's get them today and carry some momentum in tomorrow.
You got it. Scott Shapiro, everybody. And back today. He'll be back today for all the action at the Downs, and for all the action from the Stakes Barn. Dave Grenning, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. You can't. You got to be on your toes with this Triple Crown.
They're not in the gate until they're in the gate, and unfortunately, First Mission will not be in the gate. Looks like he has beginnings of a left hind ankle injury. They sort of saw something earlier in the week, although it wasn't too bad because he actually trained him on Thursday. And he said,
yeah.
Brad Cox, I talked to him this morning, he said he came off the track like a monster on Thursday. And he's been high on this horse since he got here. This is a guy with 38 3-year-olds nominated the Triple Crown. He ran 4 in the Kentucky Derby, didn't bear fruit there, but he was really looking forward to this horse in this race.
Yep.
And this is kind of a gut punch for him, and obviously Godolphin, which had been riding the wave of about a year and a half. But right now, Godolphin had gone wrong for them until these last couple of days. But they'll get up to Kentucky tonight or late tonight, get there early tomorrow, and they'll probably look him over early part of next week, First Mission that is, and see if they can get further diagnosis of what this is, and then. I don't know what probably does for him for the rest of the year. We really don't know. We really don't know much about this horse, how good he is. I know after Arabian Lion wins the Sir Bart tomorrow, people will be like, wow, what would First Mission have done in the Preakness? But
good point.
We'll have to wait and see. And hopefully it's nothing major. And hopefully he can live to fight another day, whether it's this year or early as a four, or next year as a 4-year-old.
One of the things when something like this happens and you look at a horse who didn't debut until February of this year, and that's already an indication. I mean, sometimes there's been all kinds of different reasons that 3-year-olds like this were delayed. I mean, we can talk about Mage. We can talk about Justify. I mean, they're sometimes it's like little nigs and nags. He needs 30 days. He needs 45 days. It's already too late to do anything significant. Let's turn him out for a month. Then you got, then you start again, and, any little thing can set you back. But sometimes it's also an indication that it's an ouchy horse that didn't get here for a reason.
Except sometimes you'll see, Steve, that those horses who start will maybe run once or twice, and then you'll start to see the, 60-day layoff lines. Mm. Here, this horse gave you three races, pretty much boom, 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 February 18th, March 18th, April 15th. Each one better than the previous one, and had trained, at least on paper and according to those who had seen him in Kentucky and even some of the mornings I saw him here, like he was going to take another step forward. So I hear what you're saying, but it did not seem like this was going to be the week that something was going to, set him back.
It's funny because yesterday, and it wasn't until we were walking out, and we got Dave to the Essen room. Do you now believe that Baltimore is an equitable and viable deli town?
Essen room is, yeah. I might have to do some more exploration in future visits to see if there's another one. But Essen room, you could have blindfolded me and put me in New York, and I would have been like, "Yep, this is
pastrami.
This is pastrami."
I realized later. We ran into Donna Brothers, and the topic of the alibi breakfast came up, and the fact that Brad Cox, who was on site, did not go to the breakfast. And then later, as the smoke signals were coming out of the stakes barn that something was amiss, those dots suddenly got connected.
Yeah, he was here. He's been here all week. Got here Monday and. I don't know if he was actually planning on going, but there was a lot of no-shows at the Alibi Breakfast. He was the most notable one because he had been here all week. So, yes. And then I believe John Scheinman wrote a column excoriating all those who did not show up. And now you know why Brad Cox did not show up.
Well, he's got the best alibi ever.
And now he has, now he has the best alibi ever.
Although the alibi is supposed to be for why you didn't win the Derby.
Okay. Well, he had four alibis.
John Scheinman, by the way, will join us, which is always quite a floor show. There'll be a song, there'll be a dance, there'll be all kinds of hijinks.
He might battle you for the words. You might have to sit one out for a little bit when he gets on a roll.
You know what? It occurred to me he may walk in the door here, and you stunned me yesterday at lunch with that early days of your career. I didn't know
you'll have to ask him about the LaFontaine Blue and Glen Burnie covering fights. Ask him if he remembers who among his current peers, I haven't really seen him, did he cover fights with in Glen Burnie, Maryland, when we were both just a bunch of pug reporters.
Was that like club boxing?
Yeah, but you know what? Yes, it was kind of like
Rocky and Spider.
The opening of Rocky, the original one. That's that could have been played in Glen Burnie, Maryland, and at the LaFontaine Blue.
It's a living. I'm going to absolutely bring this up. I mean, and of course, Scheinman's got that kind of a zealot feel to him, that you could have taken him and popped him, ringside in 1928.
Yeah, well, he could have been covering the Cinderella Man,
Exactly. Exactly right. That's it. I love it. But I didn't know that there was an era. Actually, you told me about this when we had lunch at Catonsville Gourmet. That I didn't know there was a pre-Jersey career for you. That was
one of the reasons I like coming back down here to the Preakness, and is I sort of have some, I don't say roots, but I did spend 7 years of my life in Maryland. I went to college at College Park, four years there, and then I worked for the Annapolis Capitol. And really, before the Capitol, what I had told you is, when I mentioned Glenn Burney, is the Capitol had a couple of offshoot papers, local papers. That the Capitol was a daily paper, and the Glenn Burney Gazette was a twice a week paper. And that was my first job for 3 months before the one of the people from one of the desk guys at the Capitol retired, former mayor Hopkins. Retired, and then they moved me down to the daily paper. But yeah, Glenn Burney Gazette was my very first, I guess, full-time job.
Well, and Joe Clancy was with us yesterday, who worked for the Cecil Whig. So there's all kinds of, I mean, and then frankly, if we could, you know, if we could turn back the clock and integrate, an earlier era in this. Room in this press box, which remains the, in a lot of ways, the best press box, isn't it, in the
if
game?
If you can get to it.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's a fair point.
The elevator, RIP.
It's a good point.
RIP, the elevator.
But you start folding in Andy Beier.
Marty McGee was the Baltimore Sun.
Marty McGee, Baltimore Sun. Vinny Perrone,
yep. Clem Florio. Jack Mann, why do I bother writing this stuff?
Why?
if these walls could talk.
Well.
That if there was anybody left to listen.
No, there is. There absolutely is. Well, I'm. That was a fun aside. And by the way, speaking of meals, I saw that you had quite an august gathering last night.
Oh yes, we have our annual. I got old enough to be invited to the cranky old Turf Writers dinner at Ciparelli's in Little Italy, which is been several years now on Thursdays of Creek this week. And we have this one server who we get every year. Her name is Helen. And boy, does she have stories. I don't know if they're all true or not, but she tells them she's a great storyteller. She's a hardworking woman. And she's, she had us there a long time last night with some of her stories. We didn't get out of there till fairly late for us, considering when we started, but it was a fun evening. Ciparelli's, if you go to Ciparelli's in Little Italy, ask for Helen.
I like it. What did you eat?
I just had a little veal parm, and the Ciparelli salad is a must. That's you can go there just for that.
I have not gotten the, it's probably now. When did we have that draw downtown at the was that the Line and Kugel or whatever there was that. There was a draw on the
this week's draw?
No. Is like maybe 3-4 years ago. It's got to be. I think it's pre-COVID because.
I missed. No, I didn't come down. Now I don't know what year you might be referring to. I didn't go to the 19 Preakness. My daughter had a show. She was senior. Something in her high school years, she had something going on that I did not come down for that one, and then I missed 20. So. And then last year I didn't get down here till late because I came back from the Derby with a nice gift called COVID. So the last couple of, the Preakness, as much as I'd like to come down here, it's been a little bit of a hardship, but it hasn't been a regular for the last, less for 3 or 4 years.
Well, because my last meal at in Little Italy was with the Trombettas.
Okay.
And not only did we eat, he likes, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to look up and to remind me of the place that he literally, we went out the door after dinner, and he said, here, come on, walked not even a half a block across a parking lot to the row house where he grew up.
Oh, wow.
In Little Italy.
Wow. Good for him.
And that is father still owned.
Nice.
Unbelievable. Here it is. DeMimo's.
Okay.
DeMimo's.
Yeah, I don't think I went. I don't know what year that was, but a lot of times I don't go to the draw. When they had the draw on Monday.
2019.
That definitely did not. I definitely was not here for 19. But a lot of times when they had the draw off campus and on a Monday, and that a lot of connections wouldn't be here, I didn't go. In fact, I would say this past week when they had the draw at the Guinness Brewery there, yeah. I would say that's a nice picture. That was first Preakness draw I went to in a while, and especially if it was off campus. If it was on the track and I was here, I'd go to it. But those Monday draws, when there's nobody here, it's like, what's there's not a big point to it. At least this year you had the Mage connections, and Jimmy Barnes was here for representing Team National Treasure, so it was sort of worth going this year. But
on the public, they let the public.
They really enjoyed it. It's a good little deal.
Home run. All right. Well, so let's talk Preakness, and then we'll hit some other spots. We lose First Mission, and
which was who I picked.
Of course.
So of course
to complicate matters.
Exactly.
So what does it leave us? How impactful on the pace front?
I think it's very impactful on the pace front, because I think he was going to sit right off of National Treasure, who I believe is going to go to the front. I know that Coffee with Chris is forward, likes to be forward, but I just don't know that he's fast enough, to be honest with you. Any horse can be fast enough, but what's the point of, you know, quarter horsing your horse out of the gate there? And in my conversations the last 2 days with John Salzman Jr., the trainer of Coffee with Chris, he said he likes to have a target. So I guess he'll take up that spot of pressing or stalking National Treasure. And then it's sort of, there's only five of them behind him, and it's really going to be who gets the best position early. You know, the more I came down really not liking Perform, I just thought, you know, this, you know, he won a maiden at Tampa. The Tessio wasn't really the greatest race of all time. But, you know, the more I talk to Shug, I think he's got a quiet, maybe not so quiet confidence that this horse is going to fire a big shot. Is he good enough to beat Mage? Probably not, but he could get in the number there. And, you know, maybe if you're looking, look, I do think now that Mage will win the race. I was looking to try and beat him with First Mission, maybe a talented horse that was going to get first run on him, that maybe that the 2 week turnaround might catch up to him when he's trying to run down a fresh horse. But I just don't know that I see that horse in here now, unless National Treasure's really taken that jump, which I don't know that I've seen yet. And he's had excuses. Look, he missed the San Felipe with a bruised foot. If you even go back to the Sham, you can't see it on the replay because they kind of cut it out. But he was on the inside of a horse that was being pulled up, and Johnny couldn't get out. And the two horses, Reincarnate, and I'm forgetting who was second in that race, and I guess I could look at it because it's right here. Reincarnate and Newgate got the jump on him, and he only got beat a length, and then that's January. Then he gets transferred to Tim, Tim Yakteen, San Felipe. He's got a scratch with a bruised foot, so he's missed between that and the weather playing some issues with training at Santa Anita. He probably came into the Santa Anita Derby a bit flat after that, and they realized he couldn't go to the Derby. Went back to Baffert, and you know Bob trains aggressively, and you know he's got the rail, he's got speed, he's got blinkers. Johnny, I'm sure, wants to get him forwardly placed. Now, is he going to go 22:45? No, I don't think so. And just a matter of whether he'll go the distance. But I think he might be better. I think he might. I guess what I'm trying to say in a long-winded way is he might give you his best race. And is his best race good enough? I don't know. Blazing Sevens, I don't know. You know, everyone's going to look at, well, Chad does this all the time. Cloud Computing, skip the Derby, or won the Preakness. Early Voting, skip the Derby, won the Preakness. I'm not convinced Blazing Sevens is a two-turn mile and 3/16 horse. His best race was the Champagne, a one-turn mile in the slop at Belmont. Somebody had to be third in the Bluegrass. He was not third beating two lengths. I think he was third beating six. So I think that's the one horse that I think might take action that I might lean against. So I think I'll use Mage, use Perform underneath, National Treasure, and I guess Blazing Sevens to pick up the fourth. I can't begrudge the folks that got their win in your in bids, like Red Route One and Chase the Chaos, and the local guy, the Coffee with Chris. Look, there's only seven in here. Only six brave souls to run against this horse now. So, it's cliche, you got to be in it to win it, but there's a lot of guys probably looking at it like, boy, don't I wish I was in there now.
Agreed. And of course, as I mentioned at the start of the show, there were seven in the first Preakness.
The very first Preakness?
Yes.
Were you here for that?
No.
Okay.
No. Marty was.
And Jack Mann. look, 1986, I believe, was the last time there were seven. If I looked up the charts correctly, Snow Chief beat Ferdinand. And we'll see. We'll see if this spurs on any people to spread out the Triple Crown, which I'm sure is another show topic for you down the road. Or, you know, or make guys decide, hey, maybe we should run back. What do we have to lose? Except the horse race.
I want you to talk about the Phillies as well right now. I just put up, by the way, just tweeted the changes are out. And, of course, first post today, we're 90 minutes away from the opener. And it happens to be a good opener. And a quick glance at the changes.
Black-Eyed Susan's down to 9. Both right. of Todd Scratch, which right. we kind of knew. And then even though I asked Mike Maker earlier in the week, are you running both in the Black-Eyed Susan? And he said yes. He's only running one. Pate is out. So the 12-horse field is now a 9-horse field with Faiza as a, you know, an unbeaten but not unbeatable horse, I think, in this spot. I think she's, you know, it's good to see her. You know, it's obviously a very talented runner, but she, even as Baffert says, she's been beating up on the same horses out west. And to be honest with you, I don't think that was a great group of fillies this year, even when you go back to last year's 2-year-old fillies.
It's fair.
And Tell Me No Lies was a 2-time grade one winner, but you know, she's not very fast
by default.
And she, you know, she didn't really run. I know. She didn't really run great in the Oaks, Kentucky Oaks, and there was probably a reason for that because she did get loose the morning before the race and ran through the barn area for a little while. So I can't hold that against her not running well in the Oaks because she probably left her race on the road somewhere in between barn 22 and 24. The interesting horse in here, and I hope it's not, I hope the scratch of First Mission doesn't mean it's going to be bad karma for Brad Cox, but Merlaza has won 3 in a row. And if you look at the video of the Valley of the Vapors Stakes, and she would be, by the way, the first horse to do the Valley of the Vapors Black-Eyed Susan.
Hey, now.
Double. you know.
Jeez.
So she did not have she was 3-5, and she did not have the greatest of trips in that race. And that's might be telling as to why Joel Rosario wasn't named back. Well, Florent Drew was aboard who had won two times earlier on the filly. So I'm interested in her. And then, you know, you and I were watching training yesterday morning and kept seeing this gray bullet running around the track a couple times. And we're like, who's that? And it was Hoosier Filly. And, you know, look, she was very good at 2, has been not very good at 3, but maybe, you know, maybe she turns it around here. I'm interested to see how they bet her. And, you know, maybe if she's attractive enough price, maybe I'll throw a few dollars on her and definitely throw in her exacta. The rail horse, Sacred Wish, is interesting. Off the second to Affirmative Lady in the Gulfstream Park Oaks in what was her first start around 2 turns. First start for George Weaver. And he had only had her about a week or 10 days when he ran her in that spot, and she ran all right. Bumped Castellano off of her for Johnny V, but she's interesting. So I'm probably going to look at the inside horses, the one, you know, 1-3-4, in trying to beat Faiza. You know, I'll use Faiza, but I would definitely look at those three as horses that I would use with Faiza.
Interesting. I thought Balpool, you know, the actress could have himself
a heck of a day.
Yeah, the nice double with Law Professor.
He could.
In the special.
I'm a little, I mean, Balpool won on April 7th. Off the turf, I'm sorry, a maiden race at Aqueduct. Then she came back 3 weeks later and off the turf, Memories of Silver that she won, which was the right spot to be in because it came off the grass and she was, you know, it was basically her and Downtown Mischief were the two horses. Now this is her third race in 5-6 weeks. So you wonder a little bit if, you know, we're going to, you know, and stepping up in company because I do think some of these fillies are better than what she's been facing. So it'll be a good test for her. We'll find out how good she might really be. But it's also coming, like I said, it's coming back a little bit quick. Maybe I'm, you know, maybe I've just watched these, like, wow, he's coming back 3 races in 6 weeks. But she is interesting, but I think this might be just a little bit of a different dynamic for her. She's also never gone 2 turns, if I'm correct. Everything's been a 1-turn race. So she's got a lot of things that she's got to show. And if she does show it, then, you know, she can be taken seriously in this division. But just a lot of things to overcome, I think.
I'm a believer in Faiza. And as I've said all week, taxed. She looked so good when we were in Kentucky and then followed it up. After everybody left, she turns around and bullets a 59 flat 5 furlongs.
Right. I inadvertently left her off the off the mentions too, so like I said, can't mention them all. But I guess Taxed, you know, taking the blinkers off last time was second to Wet Paint, in the fantasy. And then, like as you mentioned, needed one more scratch to get in the Kentucky Oaks. There was a ton of scratches out of the Derby, none out of the Oaks.
You guys did stay.
It wasn't so much that. It was waking up early, trying to figure out. I tried to get out of here real early
for the
first mission stuff. So I was, you know, clocks at 3:30 when I woke up.
Oof.
Yeah, exactly. Oofa.
Oofa is right. I actually made it to 5:30 this morning, which I was delighted to. We love doing it, but there's something, you know, when you're on the march, you get up at, you know, kooky.
Stupid times.
Exactly. Exactly right. There's your two features, the Preakness and the Black-Eyed Susan, Dave Grenning with us. John Scheinman's going to visit James Scully, Hammer in a little bit. I got to reach out to Tony, and we can't have a Preakness week without Tony Black. And I owe Seth a call, too. Seth's been in the green room for 48 hours.
You're running out of time. You need to...
Nah, listen to that. We make time.
They should give you 4 hours on
make time, consigliere.
Preakness Eve, they should give you four times.
No,
4 hours.
That's all right. I thank you. I'm happy. I'll take the under.
Do you get the weekend off this time, or are you doing another NBC radio
No,
thing?
No. That was a one-off. Derby. That was a Derby special, and... I really enjoyed it, and you know, you guys coming up, you and Marty and Mike, as well as a visit from Frank Angst, and then the taped pieces. It was a new experience to sort of skate and have 15-minute give or take those intervals where I was listening and you know, taking in the action. It was a fun experience.
Excellent.
I'd be happy to do it again, if they so choose. A couple of scratches too today before we let Dave talk about any other spots that he likes. But I should mention, by the way, spots that you might like. How about in that seventh race today, Consigliere? Tom Hagen, I think, has got a huge shot today.
Got to use him, absolutely.
Wow, not a Sicilian. Tom Hagen, the 13, 12-1, with Sheldon Russell for Matty Myers. Happy Clouds, who I talked about earlier with Schaap. Happy Clouds has come out of the Miss Preakness, so that's a field of six.
That's an interesting little race there between, you got a nice East. Maple Leaf Mel. I'm just thinking of the Chick Lang, unfortunately. Maple Leaf Mel puts her under. Beaten mark on the line there, and that's a fun little race there with what race is it?
I'm 10th.
10th race. I'm looking at the 6th. That's a good. These are some fillies that you could hear from a little later in the year if I can get to it. These programs, there's so much stuff in here. 9th race. There's no 10th race.
Is Parcells coming? Do you know?
I do not know. I do not know. Let's see here. So Maple Leaf Mel and then Key of Life, another one for Brad. That's a good little showdown there. Again, you got a couple of showdowns in these 3-year-old sprint races of horses that have a lot of speed, and you know they're going to go at each other. Key of Life and Maple Leaf Mel could potentially go, and then you know what is what does that do for Philly like off the pace Afternoon Tea, who's also just has a maiden win to her credit, but be interesting to see how that sets up, maybe even a little topsy as well. But I'm interested in seeing that showdown, Key of Life and Maple Leaf Mel, as I'm interested in seeing the Chick Lang showdown between Having a Meltdown and Super Chow tomorrow. A very confident Jorge Delgado, by the way, almost calling his shot there, a little Mark Messier guarantee type thing. He thinks he's going to win that race. He's had to make a jockey change, obviously. You probably talked about this earlier in the week. Chantal Sutherland is injured and out for a while. So we went to Paco Lopez. So that's going to be a fun little ding-dong battle, East Coast, West Coast showdown between Having a Meltdown from the rail and Super Chow from Toward the Outside.
Well, that is tomorrow's Chick Lang, which goes as the 6th and is the first of the graded stakes. The early stake tomorrow at 12:16 is the Sir Barton, where Arabian Lion.
He looks. He's 2-5 on the line, and he kind of looks 2-5, 2-5-ish to me.
Although the one yesterday, following C,
I didn't get 1-5. I mean, I know this is red, sounds like it's red boarding, and I guess, but 1-5 on a horse that's been off for 500 days, what are we doing there? I mean, now, could I have had synthesis? Probably not, but, likely not. But I mean, when do you stop wagering it, on following C at, you know, 1-5 for off for 500? I know Todd's good, but my word. 500 days.
What did you, did we talk the dinner party the other day? Cause I, the more I look, the more Hurricane Dream looks to be very tough in there for Graham Motion.
Yeah, he does look very good in there. I would agree with that, but we hadn't talked about it, but, Hurricane Dream does look like he's good in there. And then the sprint, turf sprint, I think, whichever that one is, that's right. There's a lot of speed signed up in the race, but he just might be, he just might be faster than him. I don't think we get anywhere. If that's 12-1 out there tomorrow, that's race 10, number 6. If he's 12-1, I have a hard time thinking that's going to be the case. But there's a lot of speed. I get it, but he just might be faster than all of them. He's pretty quick, that horse.
Well, and I said yesterday to Peter Rotundo Jr., you know, I was confounded a little bit on the Friday card with those three, with two of the turf sprints, and my philosophy has kind of evolved with turf sprints that when I feel, you know, kind of like I can't pick a winner out of here, I go looking for the speed of the speed, because invariably it you know, it ends up being a horse that just gets out there and does what Ravelli's horse did at Churchill,
right.
You know. But boy, I'll be a chicken in a pot if that happens, because I did not. I used Coppola for Dale Romans, actually. Beer Can Man from D'Amato. I mean, I'm not going to miss a chance to use California, you know, turf sprint speed over here. And as quixotic as he is, Artemis City Limits for Maker, and Duarte's got nothing better on the rail. Well,
it's a fun race. Definitely a fun race.
This is the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. What about the dirt? What did you do in the Maryland Sprint?
What did I do in the Maryland Sprint? I'm not
the 11th. Because this is an important, we talked about it yesterday with Jeff Franklin.
This might be one of those, this is a wacky, hello, Hot Rod. Some of his best races have been six furlongs.
Yep.
What, you know, why are we just getting back to it now? And I'm just curious to me that with the speed that's in here, including Brittany's other horse, Wonder Where Craig Is, why can't this horse sit back and come with the run? Now, it'll look a little odd. The husband's on Wonder Where Craig Is, and Jevy and Toledo's on Hello Hot Rod. I get it. But I just like the cutback. You know, the horse has got 2 3-quarter races on his belt and under his belt, and they were second and third. And I just thought there was a ton of speed in here, and maybe this horse could trip out at a big, big price.
Wow.
So, I don't know. I'm just looking. I see a lot of chalk, so I was looking.
Right.
I was looking for areas where something wacky could happen, and I thought, you know, I'm not. I get it. Nakatomi's isn't off the pace sort, but I don't want Wesley Ward at 5-2 or something like that. So I don't know. I was looking at a horse that might be able to close, and on the cutback, I thought this horse might be okay. It's a wacky pick, but wacky's good.
It's a fun. It's an interesting race, and the horse that I this morning, because I had to. I'll do most of the Saturday work after we get off the air today in terms of the write-up. But I did have to handicap this because it's leg D of the all-dirt pick 5. Mm-hmm. And for those that haven't looked, today, race 8, that first level allowance, the Pimlico Special, the Black Eyed Susan, those are the 3 legs today, and then tomorrow the Maryland Sprint and the Preakness. The horse that I paused on, and I even started poking around Formulator, Brendan Walsh, turning back Prevalence to 6 furlongs off of a turf route. Walsh has done this 3 times. Turf to dirt, route to sprint, and there was even one other. Was there something else? Is he blinkering?
Blinkers on.
So there's the 3 karma moves.
Right.
He's 1-3 doing this. the last 3 years. And he the one that won was a claimer.
Right.
So it's a limited sample.
Right.
But he is 1-for-3 with that combination. Turf to dirt, route to sprint, blinkers on.
Right.
It just seems
I've lost my fair share of money on this horse. So maybe it's a good time. I'm jumping off with both feet, so maybe this is a good time for you to jump on. I know the only problem I have for you is IRAD's presence is probably not going to give the horse the price that it probably deserves. But maybe I think there's a lot of desperation here with this horse, but
high profile day to be experimenting or throwing caution to the wind, as it were. I sat and I looked and I said, all right, I gotta go find the stats to maybe back this up. Do note, he's comes in with a pair of bullets as well.
I'm not gonna talk you off a price. I've had enough prevalence.
Well, the price for me in there, Jerry Robb, who I think the world of, he's got the Maryland bred Al Loves Josie, the Timonium Yearling, a $8,000 purchase that's made $282,000. He's okay. 7-for-9 in the exacta, going 3/4. Mm-hmm. Second here last year in a restricted allowance. You get the X-Man. I thought some things to like about Al Loves Josie.
Again, I'm not going to talk you off a horse that's a price, but I glanced over him fairly quickly and thought he was not good enough for these.
Well, you got War Toxin for Uriah St. Louis, the Rosado brothers, the Godfather references are all over this card.
Oh man. Well, I mean, you'll get the right price on Uriah. He doesn't win under 30-1, so he might as well take his win.
All right, what else you got?
Not a lot, Steve. That's about it for me.
We've butched out as we've squeezed the lemon dry from Dave Grenning.
Pretty much.
What are you covering? Today
I have the Miss Preakness and Preakness, and I believe I picked up one more. And I couldn't tell you what it is at this point. Yeah. Sir Barton. I think I picked up the Sir Barton.
Oh, so. that'll be good.
It's early. I'm 3 year olds early, I'm 3 year olds late, and I'm 3 year old sprinters in between. So
well, and they're nicely spaced, which gives you time to get up and back from the press box.
I keep looking at that makeshift elevator that I guess NBC's using, and I'm like, Godspeed, guys.
You mean the thing that's attached to the back of the building?
Yes. I think that's what NBC's using to get their equipment. I don't know if Mike Tirico's going on that or Larry Coleman's.
Well, after Mike Tirico's comments 2 weeks ago, he should try this elevator here, like the L.A. Law Club ending after that stunt that he pulled. What? By the way, speaking of the roof, we've buried the lead.
Oh.
The Durkin story.
Oh yes, Tommy's coming back to call the Belmont Stakes for Fox and a couple of other races on that card, and we're going to the bullpen and reaching out. It's the first year first year that Fox has the Triple Crown, and they're making a splash-tastic move, if you will.
Hey now,
I talked to him yesterday. He's all psyched up about it, and he's actually might be at Belmont today calling races. He told me he's going to go to Belmont, even though he lives in Saratoga. He's going to come to Belmont for several cards, and he's got ample. This would be a good day to do it. No one's going to see him because he's in the press box. There's nobody there, but I think he's going to call some races in the press box into the recorder, and sharpen up his skills. I like the line he had him. He said, would you go to a dentist who's been off for 9 years to get a tooth pulled? He was quite happy, quite appreciative of the effort, of the opportunity that Fox is giving him, having been out of the booth for nine years. I will say this: if Mage were to win the Preakness, they might want to lodge an objection for Durkin coming back because he is 0-for-9 calling Triple Crown attempts.
That's the funny part about this.
And the year he left, after 2014, when Chrome didn't get it done, the year he left, 2015, Larry Colmus got to call the Triple Crown winner, American Pharoah. So if I'm Mage's people, I might get together with Fox and say, is there any chance we can maybe have him call the Woody Stevens and then let somebody else call the Belmont?
Well, it would be fitting in that regard. I was the first thing I thought of when the story came out, and you've known about this for weeks, and it's kind of fun. Did you see some of the nutty reactions to it?
Thankfully, no. I saw one reaction that I was kind of surprised with, and I don't want to name names, but I was like, just kind of did in the back. It's, to me, no disrespect to anybody who's calling races now, and Tom is my friend, but this is just to me the best that's ever got behind a bike and did this. And if you're gonna be upset or disappointed that he's going to come back and call this year's Belmont, don't listen. Johnny I is going to,
he'll be doing it.
Johnny I is going to call the race on track and come to the track, and you can listen to Johnny I. It was terrific. I'm glad that Johnny came back for Belmont, but it's kind of a cool story for Tom.
I thought so
too.
I thought so too.
People just like to complain. It's one of the reasons why racing's still going strong. I say this all the time. There are two things that people love to do. They love to complain. They love to gamble. Ladies and gentlemen, horse racing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Grenning with a bravado visit. What a week you've turned in. Thank you. Dave Grenick, folks. How about me pulling out that picture, that fabulous picture of you and Dale Romans and Priv?
That was a good one.
That's one of my favorite. Yeah. The little smile Jay's got is hysterical. That was a Sunday morning.
Oh, that was the day after.
Was that the day after
Shackelford? Was that the day after Shackelford won?
No, because the filly, Dale's filly, had won. She had won the Black Eyed Susan.
Okay.
He had that, and he was owed a Black Eyed Susan because of the shameful disqualification of Smart and Pretty.
Okay, right. Right.
Was it Pretty and Smart? Smart and Pretty.
Something like that.
That one was unbelievable. I actually called that race. We were Carolyn Connolly and me and JJ actually were in their studio.
Right.
And we were an afternoon show then, 4 to 7.
Right.
And the audio, Rodman's audio went out. And it's my one race call ever.
That out of the archives.
How about that? And, if it had been reversed, if Ramon Dominguez had been on Dale's horse,
right,
and Norberto Arroyo had been on I'm going to forget the winner, they wouldn't have done it. They did it because it was Norberto Arroyo. And it was a vindictive kind of a bad rep disqualification, and it was totally unfair. And even Ramon said after he had no business being put up.
Good thing you said that after the got put up.
Exactly. Anyway, what choice did he have? But Dale, that was the morning after, because there's a really funny picture too of you three talking to Dale and the fillies being walked, and she's like reaching over. I'll send you that. It's a great
picture. What we're talking to here. She knew we were talking about her.
It was very funny. She said, "I think I put a caption. What about me? I won the Black Eyed Susan."
All right,
Dale Robbins and Dave and Jay. Let's take our break. 90 minutes in. Thanks so much, Dave Grenning, everybody. We've got Scheinman. We got Scully Hammer. Dave is right, actually. I got a ton going on here. We kind of waded into the morning, didn't we? Second half coming up. And at this point, I don't know. Okay, you have music or no? Just want to head out. Just head out for the break.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America.
but we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically?